Today's episode is made possible in part by our sponsors, including Salt and Light Eye Care. Thanks to New Mexico's faith-based boutique practice for expert vision care and advanced aesthetics and treatments. From eye exams to dry eye therapy, they help you see and shine with purpose. Dr. Mindy and her team go above and beyond. Plus, every visit helps support missions near and far. Learn more at saltandlighteyecare.com.
Welcome to Table Talks with Kay Woodward. Married for more than 43 years, Kay and her husband Galen have three married sons, nine grandchildren, and are longtime pastors in Albuquerque, New Mexico. With the recent release of her new cookbook, which is filled with treasured recipes and stories, she's excited to bring you into her world of faith and family. So, take a seat at the table with Kay as she welcomes special guests from varied backgrounds and stages of life to dive into relevant and important topics of today. Please enjoy today's episode.
Today, I get to sit down with my friend, Julia Veach. Julia and her husband, Chad, lead Zoe Church in Los Angeles, and they have four beautiful kids, sons, Winston, Maverick, and Clive, and their daughter, Georgia. I've known Julia for over a decade, and she has such a gift for bringing hope and joy into real life. I know you're going to be inspired by this conversation, so let's dive in. Welcome, Julia, and thank you so much for joining me on Table Talks. And I'm just thrilled to have you. I've been waiting for a few months to be able to chat with you. Our lives are crazy, and yours is busier, but thank you for joining me today.
Oh, it's so good to see you. It's been a minute. And I love that you said you've been waiting for me. So obviously this has been on me, but we're here and we made it happen. And it's so good to see you. And I can't wait to catch up with you. And look at, you're in your home. You're in your kitchen. I love it. I'm in my kitchen. I'm at my island. It's facing this way. I realize I'm white on white. I might be a floating head here, but hopefully my words matter more than
me too. And waiting on you, because we're going to talk about that. You've got this amazing family of four children, and your lives are so busy. Just yesterday, recently, you know, I was watching your social media. This will drop in a couple of weeks, so it'll be current and relevant. But you celebrated 10 years, you and your husband, Chad, planted a church called Zoe Church in Los Angeles. And yesterday was a huge day for you. I'm watching this thinking, how is she coming on this podcast today with a conference last week, 10 years yesterday, kids everywhere.
Everywhere. In every corner. Yeah. They're climbing out of the walls. No. We celebrated 10 years as a church yesterday. And it was such a celebration. I was telling Chad that my jaw was getting sore, maybe because I grind at night. I don't know, but because I was smiling all day yesterday, I'm just thinking, like, we were just a couple of kids. We only had two kids when we moved down to LA, and then we added two more. Were they planned? I don't know. We don't need to talk about that, you know.
But you know what's interesting? Just yesterday, last night, I was scrolling through. If I remember, I love to look at my Facebook memories, just run through them, because the grandkids are growing so quickly. They wind up making me sad. But yesterday, Chad's bright, smiling face popped up on the stage at our church, which was then Copper Point. Now the name is Citizen Church. And I believe that was his first time. It was 12 years ago yesterday.
Yeah, I think if I remember right, Georgia was a baby. She was, I think, newly diagnosed. Mm-hmm. And
how old is she now?
She's 13.
Okay, that would have been about right.
Yeah, I think he came right after her diagnosis. I think it was 13 years ago. Yes. He came, and
much has changed.
So impacted. I know. I have a teenager. I have a 13-year-old. Sweet Georgia, she is a living miracle, and her story is inspiration to us all, me included. and she has severe special needs. And then I make a joke, and some people don't always agree with this, but I tell people that all my kids are special needs because they will always make me cry and they always need some sort of special attention. But I have an 11-year-old, and he just started middle school, sixth grade. And wow, that's wild. Middle school. He's in middle school. And then I have my 9-year-old son, Maverick. Maverick means unorthodox, and he beats to his own drum. He's the middle of the three boys, and he's brilliant, and he's my sunshine, but he'll keep you on your toes. And then my youngest is 7. His name is Clive. So I've got Georgia, Winston, Maverick, and Clive. And we celebrated 10 years yesterday as a church from our launch day. But we've been in Los Angeles, I think now 11, just over, mm-hmm. no, it's 11 years. We moved at the end of August in 2014. And yes. God's been faithful, and it's been such a fun, wild journey.
Time goes by so quickly. I want to talk about your story, your life before Zoe Church a little bit, because I want people to get to know you. This is what's cool. Your husband, Chad, has been to our church several times. You've been a couple of times. You've spoken at our Flourish Conference, and we've just loved getting to know you too. And you guys are such a dynamic duo. What a team. But what was your background before ministry? So were you always in ministry? When did you meet Chad? Tell me about your story.
BC before Christ, no, just kidding, before Chad. Yeah. I like in our first year of marriage, this is really funny. I moved, we dated 6 months. We had a 3-month engagement. So 9 months start to finish. We never talked about getting engaged, getting married, our future together. He proposed. I mean, today it's like, couples get engaged and like the venue is booked, the dress is picked out, the ring is designed by the girl. Like, I didn't know anything. So he proposed, and like, we had never talked about anything. I end up moving. And I moved into, I mean, he was a pastor. I worked in finance. I'll tell you a little bit about that. But we just had a lot of change. And I remember just in those early years of marriage, getting in arguments and like, just feeling like, oh my goodness, I had so much change so fast. Like, I felt like a little loss of identity. And I used to joke, and my maiden name is McGregor. And I was like, Julia McGregor was somebody. Like, I used to be something, you know, just like, I am now like Chad's wife and Chad's world. And I mean, if you've met him for 10 seconds, you know that he's larger than life. And he would just like walk into the Starbucks and know every barista and like shake their hands and know their names. And I mean, he was like the prince of the town that we were in. And I was like, wait a minute. I'm someone too. But no, I grew up, I'm the oldest of 4 girls. And I was raised, there's no boys. I was raised by great parents. They are actually pastors. So I was a pastor's daughter. And I loved the church. I loved the local church, but I didn't want to be in ministry. I was raised by parents in the ministry era where they didn't have a lot. And I was like, I'm going to make money. Like, this was like my thing. And since I was the firstborn, I had like everything planned out. Like, I like wanted to go to business school. I wanted to go to law school later. I just had my whole life planned out. And that was, you know, you just can't plan your life. That's the, if someone is 16 or 17 listening to this, like, it doesn't work like you want it to go. But I did work in finance. I worked and I did real estate. I worked in private equity. I did residential mortgage loans for about 11 years, even after we got married and when I had Georgia. And I quit in finance when I got Georgia's diagnosis when she was 4 months old, but I did 11 years. So 18, even through college, I was working, going to business school at night. And and I loved work. I always loved to work. I loved the rhythm of working. I loved just that set. I really enjoyed working in finance. And so there was a portion of time where I was like, okay, we're stepping out in faith. Like, I'm going to help navigate what this looks like to be a stay at home mom. And that was a huge adjustment for me. I remember like Chad would come home and I was like pulling every drawer open, like rearranging everything, like just trying to keep myself busy. You know, I was like, he's like, why is the fridge labeled? And just to let you know, I'm no longer that mom. In my heart, I'm like, oh, organization is great, but I'm much more production over perfection now. But that's what four kids do to you. And, but yeah, no, I never thought I would marry a pastor. But I was like, that was not in the cards. And, but yeah, we're having really fun doing ministry together. I always did love the local church and I did serve the church while I was in business. I just thought it would look a little differently. So, Chad won me over and then we took a different direction, but, yeah, it's been an adventure ever since.
So yeah, that answers my question. I think that you didn't grow up thinking I'm going to be a pastor. So when I was young, you were a pet only, and I don't mean only, but being a female pastor really wasn't on the table. It was pastor's wife, you know, and I took that role great. But then once we were in ministry, I'm thinking, yeah, but I want to be a leader too. I don't want to just, I even took organ lessons in college at University of New Mexico so I could be a great pastor's wife.
Oh, like an organist.
Yes,
like-
I was going to help them out. But what I really wanted to be was pastor, a co-leader, you know, with my husband. And that was an evolution over decades because that wasn't in style, you know, for over four decades ago, not too in vogue, if you will, back then. But things have changed, which is great. And you guys, if I remember, I mean, I know, okay, where were you before Zoe Church? I believe you were at the Pacific Northwest.
Yeah, we're in Washington State. Yeah. And Chad and I both, we were born and raised in Washington. And he was in a suburb of Tacoma. He was a youth pastor when we got married. And he had been at this church. It was a four square church. He had been at this church for probably, I think, like 4 or 5 years when we got married. And then we stayed there. I wasn't on staff there. I continued to work in finance, and he was on staff there. But I like would ch- you know I would show up and I would serve and I would love on the kids. But it was something that I did navigate, like that dance of like, okay, like how can I support him? What does it look like, you know, to co-lead together? We're newlyweds, you know, we were learning each other too in that season. But what happened was that we launched a college ministry in our first year of marriage. And that felt fun because we were pioneering something new together. It wasn't me trying to step into something he's already built and figure out my dance. And I think that's when we started to learn how to like co-lead together. But a lot of those early days, you know, I was working Monday to Friday and we had evening services. Thursday night was college services and Sunday night was high school ministry. And then I had a really long commute. And so I remember I'd have to wake up. I mean, it's dark and rainy in Washington. Thank Jesus that we were delivered from that weather. But I'd have to wake up like on a Monday morning, and Mondays were Chad's day off. So he would, you know, he would sleep in late and be rested. And he would want to do our date nights on Monday night. And as a newlywed, I just remember like wanting just to be more of like a pleaser. And so I was like, yeah, that works great. Like if you want to do it, I can figure it out. And so I was raised in a family, like my dad was a football coach. It's like, you go through the hard way. Like you don't, there's no quick fixes. Like you don't go around it. Like you go through it. Like, there's no easy way out. And I mean, so much so, like, I, you know, it's like not healthy. My sisters and I like we love like doing hard things, like a little too much. Like none of us had epidurals. I don't think that's for everyone. It was just, it's in us. Like we were just raised tough by a tough father. And so I remember being like, yeah, I can do hard things. And just like having to commute like an hour and a half to work early on a Monday morning, like after doing ministry till late at night on Sunday. And then like getting ready for a date night on Monday night when I'm just exhausted. Like I want to just come home and relax and but just like feeling like, okay, 6 months, 8 months, a year, like I've got to make a change and like not knowing how to communicate health like healthily, like, oh, we need to make a change here. Something has got to change. I either got to find a different job closer, or we need to sell our house and move closer to my job. But yeah, I think there was like that first year of marriage where I was trying to do that dance as like, what is the pastor's wife look like? What does like a co-leader look like? What does like a newlywed look like? There was a lot going on, and I remember just feeling a lot of sense of like I'm trying to figure out what God wants for me, and what that looks like.
And when you work another job, I owned a business for 30 years, even while we pastored. And it was just a really interesting, two paths at one time, but everybody has to navigate, right?
Right.
Were you married a while, or how long were you married when you had Georgia?
We were married. Well, I will say this, in our first year too, an added pressure is I owned five homes. Like I bought five homes in my 20s, and then Chad had a house, and it was the recession. So it was 2008. So there was a lot of financial pressure too. And again, like I felt like I have to do things the right way, the hard way. I can't take the easy way out. So, I had to work really hard in those couple of years to figure out how to like resolve a lot of that like real estate like downward market and how to fix that. So there was a lot of pressure. So we got married in 2008, and Georgia was born in the end of 2011. So we waited a couple of years, and and that was good for us. So she came December of 2011.
What, how, so you mentioned Georgia when we first came on, and the fact that Chad had just come to our church to speak, I think at a big youth intersect event the first time, but she had been, she wasn't that old. She had just been diagnosed. Can you just, in case people don't know your story or haven't read the book, take us back to when you first learned of Georgia's diagnosis, and just give us some history about your family with Georgia.
Yeah, she was about 3 months when we started noticing some developmental delays. She wasn't hitting some of her markers. She wasn't gaining weight. I had a perfectly healthy pregnancy. Everything was fine. And then we underwent like a series of tests, and we got her diagnosis when she was 4 months in April of 2012. And it was like alarming. I think I just like always knew that something like wasn't right and they weren't going to be positive results. But I think I was really, really overwhelmed by the prognosis that they gave me too. So she has a genetic malformation. And so when they say like this isn't a disease, there's no cure, there's no fix, it's a disorder. You're just like, oh, wait a minute. Like, I want to be proactive. Like, I want to find the solution. I want to find the surgery or the specialist. I want to know how to help her. And I mean, especially when it's your first, like you just have like big, bold dreams, big, bold prayers. It's just like I like even think about like one prayer walk when I was pregnant with her, just like dreaming of her wedding one day. You just firstborn. And so the medical term is called lissencephaly. She has microcephaly. It's a genetic rearrangement in chromosome 17, and it happened fluky sometime during pregnancy. And she has in essence, a smooth brain. And now there's varying types of smooth brain, but she is like a very like severe, it's mostly all smooth. So some cases at that point when we received the diagnosis, there was probably only like 1,200 cases on record. So it was very rare. We were in Washington State, and I had researched. I mean, that's all you can do at that point. You know, like you're like trying to hold on to like, what does this prognosis look like? What's this going to look like for our life? But I remember the neurologist saying that, you know, just like straight off the Wikipedia page, it's like, you know, about 50% make it to age 2 and the other 50% make it to age 10. And so, but he had assumed that she wouldn't live past 2 years old because of the extremity of it. The neurologist was really just double downing on like her quality of life is going to be really poor. Like you're going to have to like switch mentalities of like caregiver. Like this is just going to be bad. The epilepsy and the seizures were, you know, always the worst part of her diagnosis. But I remember at the time researching and you're just thinking like, you know, can we have more kids? Like, you know, can anyone give me clear answers of like what this looks like? Cause you know, the neurologist is not, he's not a specialist in this field. There's only 1200 cases. This is unique. And I remember, I think just sometimes like when you feel like really confused and lost, you're like, I just need answers. I just need clarity. The specialist that wrote, he's a geneticist from University of Chicago. He had just transferred to Seattle Children's Hospital, and he wrote the Wikipedia page and held all of the data for all the cases of lissencephaly in America. And people flew to him from all over to meet with him and to talk about this at this point. And he had an 18 months waiting list, but he was in the state of Washington. I was like, wow, this could be really an answer to prayer. So I remember I got on a waiting list and I ended up getting in on a cancellation and seeing him. And he was like, just so awesome, like to navigate through. And he was such a gift. And he like gave me so much more clarity. There was probably like 11 people in the room, research assistants and like, you know, like other doctors. I mean, like they were just like, oh, she's rare, you know? And it was just overwhelming as like a first time mom, like navigating, figuring out, you know, what all this means for us. And you're just, when you're like, I don't know what to do. Like, this feels very overwhelming. I remember at that time, just being like, I just need answers, because if I can get some clarity, then I can like move on to the next step. But, she's 13 years old today. It has been, her prognosis is she's about a 3 month old developmental age. So she's diaper dependent. She doesn't sit up. She doesn't roll over. She's never walked or talked. She's G tube fed. But she's really healthy. Like she has a very strong immune system. She is doing really well. She's in school. The bus came and got her today. She goes to school every day. And yeah, she's amazing.
She really is. And being a part of the journey from afar for all these years, one thing I know, because you can't go by people's life based on social media stories, because My life looks perfect on social media. Your life looks perfect on social media. Even, when you have struggles with your church or broken bonds with your boys or, dealing with, Georgia. But I know as a mama that your faith was so tested. I remember we stood in faith for miracle for God to heal her. And it's crazy because on my social media feed, for whatever reason, Johnny Erickson Tata keeps coming up. And I've never even followed any of that. But the last few days, she's been coming up and I've been reading about when she was paralyzed and how they prayed and, for that she would walk again. And I don't understand all that, but it does shape your faith. It shapes your life. It shapes ministry outlook, but not, I would say, not in a negative way. So I want to know, I know there are people listening. Their journey may not be just like yours or like mine or someone else's, but they feel their faith is shaken. Sure. I hear stories every week. How did you do it? How did you let it not, I don't know. How did you walk the path? How are you walking the path?
Well, I'm limping because I have an injury because this is 40s, but no. I think the best gift that we got was adding life into our home via healthy babies that follow Georgia. Because then it was just like fresh life, just surrounding her. And then, I think, I don't know the statistics, but, it's very rare that people with that extreme of a diagnosis have another child, whether that's through fear or it's all consuming, just the care alone, it's like, it's hard to fathom caring for another child. And, people don't think that they're strong enough to risk the chances of reoccurrence. And Winston, our second son, his name means joyful stone. And I had prayed, and she was doing really poorly when she was a toddler. Like, it was so bad. I could barely leave the house, the amount of seizures, the aspiration, just 24 hours of just trying to keep her hydrated or some nutrition down. It was just really sad to, and controlling seizures is, I mean, it's just like a continual dance with teams of neurologists. Those medications are hard, and we tried all sorts of different things, but Winston, when he came, his name meant joyful stone, and he was just so, just to see a baby develop, there was just so much joy in that. And I think that just gave me a glimpse of oh man, God, you're good and you're faithful and you can still give me joy in the morning, And so, that was a way. And so I, maybe there are people that aren't able to have more children or aren't able to find that, that joy through another life in the home. But I do think that there were other ways that we grabbed a hold of joy and faith and hope and love, just through life, through community, life through silly hobbies. I mean, it sounds so practical, just adding life in the home through exercise, through things that brought us an ability to smile in those seasons was really important for us. And it wasn't just choosing faith and believing for healing for Georgia, either this side of heaven or when she goes and dances in heaven. But it was like choosing life and choosing joy every single day, and easier said than done, but we just had to add, silly things to our life that made it less heavy.
Wow. And you moved far away from family and what you knew your whole life to plant a church of all places, Los Angeles. And I mean, that's how I felt about Brandon and Delaney going to DC. I'm like, there's so many other places it could have been a tad easier, but went to Los Angeles. You took your, you know, baby with you and your next baby. I mean, you had Winston, right? You moved with both.
Yeah.
And you started a church. When you're talking, I'm thinking, and that's new life too. So that as hard as planting a church is, it's the hardest thing I think I've ever watched anyone do. Now being able to watch my own son and daughter-in-law and navigate that with little bitty children. But the excitement that it brings. So I know that that was healthy to your journey too. It's hard, but you were a football coach's daughter. So you're good for hard things.
Really fun. I loved the adventure. I would say one of the harder seasons for us was the waiting season. I mean, that's hard for everyone. We all live in between the place of pain and promise. You know, we're all right there in the middle, you know, trusting God together and trying our best. Not to ask God to get on our plan. I mean, that's like what a lot of my prayers are. I'm like, God, do you not see my petition? Could you just share calendars with me and just answer all these requests? But just like surrendering and getting on his plan. But what happened was, is that while we were undergoing tests for Georgia, God spoke to us about starting a church in LA. And we're like, what in the world?
This episode is also brought to you in part by the Denclow team at Coldwell Banker Legacy Real Estate. Jason and Bree bring unmatched experience and a personal touch to every home journey. Start today at homebuyingabq.com. Hey friends, I'm so glad you're here. If you're enjoying this episode, please take a second to subscribe, leave a quick review, and share it with a friend. It's the best way for people to find the podcast and be encouraged. Now, back to the conversation.
And so when we got the diagnosis, we had this simultaneous dream in our heart. And we're like, how in the world is this your timing, God? So we kind of shelved the dream about going to Los Angeles because we were navigating, you know, what Georgia needed at the time and what that looked like for her. So we left the youth pastor position and we sat in another church in the Seattle area and like learned and rested and were like trying to navigate the grief really of Georgia's diagnosis while we are like brewing with this dream at the wrong timing at the same time. And that is like such a weird tension to think back of, like, man, like we want to go, but like we are in pause, like we are in waiting, we are in transition. And so we did end up, we were in the Seattle area for like a year and a half. Like we were in just like pause, like waiting, like we are wrestling this dream. We're like, God, we'll give it to you. Like if you don't want us to move down in 5 years or 10 years, like we'll wait. But we ended up like just bursting at the seams after like a year. We're like, we've got to go do this. And so we moved down with two kids. Like we had nothing, like we didn't even have a house lined up. We shipped our pods down and they just held at like the pod center in Los Angeles. Like we didn't even have an address to send our stuff to. And I'm like on Craigslist, like halfway down the drive, like in Sacramento, finding a house and just signing a contract without even looking at it. Like, I don't know if this is like some sketchy neighborhood or anything. So that was the house that we started the church in. That was the house that we brought the two younger babies home to. But yeah, we came down. In summer of 14, that fall, we started like meeting in the living room on Tuesday night. I mean, I got donuts and the first expense, like after I opened the church bank account, was like white plastic Amazon trays to put our donuts on for our Tuesday night gatherings in our living room. And then the second expense was I bought 10 black folding chairs. They were $9.90 a piece from Target. You know, they're on sale. Like, it's like 10 chairs because we're like, okay, the next Tuesday, we've got a few more people in the living room. And we just like met on Tuesday nights. And yeah, like, and so I just think back the adventure of it. Like, it was big faith. It was craziness. It was wild times, but it was some of my favorite years.
And it's really interesting.
So fun. And I do love adventure. I do love like a bit of like the newness of something. Like, it's exciting. But yeah, it was really fun. It was really special times.
Two things you said. You know, you talked about the waiting and transition, that transitions, you know, a hard place to be. And it really is, because you also mentioned labor and not having epidurals. I did not either. It wasn't a thing. No one had an epidural when I had the boys. You just did labor and delivery. And transition was the worst time of all, because you couldn't push, you couldn't get the baby there, but you just were there, and they're saying, almost, almost. I'm like, almost. I mean, you can't
push
me. I'm done. And I needed to that example and that picture all my adult life, because I don't like transition. I am not a proponent of change of any sort. The older I've gotten, the less adventurous I am. I'm a planner. I'm OCD, and I can manage my life and yours too. So I really, when you said if God would get on your planner, in, you know, if you could just share planners and have a Google share with God, it would help, be helpful. And, but then, isn't it beautiful when you trust and trust and trust and go through transition, and you get to this side of whatever you were transitioning from, and you look back and go, oh yeah, I get it, God. I see it so well, so clearly. And so as you're talking about transition, I wanted to reiterate that. Oh my goodness. That's a whole sermon talk. Just
that,
right.
That transitional labor is absolutely the worst part. And that's a great analogy. But with my second son, Winston, I had 12 people in the room. I have three sisters, a mom, a mother-in-law, a girlfriend, someone else. It was a party in that room. But I was transitioning, and my eyes were closed. I was in so much pain. And I hear my husband, I hear Chad saying something, and I crack open my eye, and he is getting a massage from his mother.
Yes.
You know? And I am just like, you know what, right now you're getting a massage, you know, you really need that right now. But
I need all eyes on me. I need everyone's attention here, and know your baby's fine. I understand that. You also having three sons, you're like, oh, but my boy, he's so precious. She'll be fine. I don't know. Also, like to be in the room with a couple of my daughter-in-laws when they had some.
It is magical, but
it's fun to watch my son. So yeah, transition. I had a party in my last baby too. I figured if I'm going to do this, I might as well have a whole team here to be all about me, which leads me to what next thing I wanted to talk to you about anyway is community. Isn't it crazy how we're just born for community? Even an introvert. Introverts act like they don't want community, but they do. What they don't want is a crowd and have to socialize maybe, but community. You started your church based on community.
Yeah.
Churches thrive because of community. When you went through a diagnosis with your daughter, you needed community. When you celebrated with your first son, Winston, after George's birth, you wanted community to celebrate. Isn't it interesting? We have to have community. And so, I mean, how did you get to LA, you really don't know anybody or many people, you know, how did you build your tribe? How did you build community in a new place?
Yeah, I think this is a great conversation, because I feel like I have learned even more lessons on this topic, on the topic of connection, the need for connection, just understanding what kind of connections fuel us or drain us or what we need. Relationships in our 40s are different too. Post-COVID, relationships have changed so much. The church has changed, you know, people in general, they've weaponized boundaries a little bit too much. You know, they're not as like willing to give or to say yes. The no is a hot topic right now.
I won't ever forget what you just said. I'm going to interrupt for a second. You said people are weaponizing boundaries. I feel that so strongly. I feel like it is a real thing, boundaries, but I think people took it to an extreme.
Yeah.
It bothers me on every level. I that is my soapbox, because I said, I can't find boundaries in the Bible, really.
Yeah, I agree. I think, you know, we are called to be servants. We're called to give and to love and to serve people and to have all of our conversations. You know, I love in Luke, you know, Jesus is either coming from a meal, at a meal, or going to a meal. I think that we lack hard conversations around tables right now. And, you know, we do it over text. And I mean, these are like some of my things that I've seen, like where I'm trying to make efforts to pull more people around tables to have. Okay, so I'm just going to go back. I always thought I was an extrovert. You know, if you know me, like people think that I am a big extrovert. I would probably identify more as an introvert, but I need people. I like really enjoy reading. I really enjoy alone time. I am like so happy like with quiet time, but I need people. Like it's better for me to be around people, but I like, it's just something that it's like, I have learned that more in the last few years. I was always very down to like have the house full of people, have people over, be with people. But then I realized like I was never really talking about much, you know, like I wasn't like good at like connecting with people. I was more just like, oh, I just love the like the party, like the fun, like the people around. And so you know, something that like I've been trying to challenge myself is like being a better person that connects with people. And I do think that the enemy's tactic is isolation. And I think, you know, during the COVID era for us, like I saw the enemy like use that tactic on me, and I just feeling isolated. And when you are disconnected or where there's distance, like I do think that there can be distortion, like with like, what are they doing? You know, like you assume that someone's talking about you, like just the narrative becomes distorted. Like you assume that you didn't get the invite when it's like someone could have just forgot, or, you know, like, and you start to assume a more negative train of thought in isolation. And I was recognizing some of those patterns, and I was just like, oh man, like I can just really see the enemy just having his way in isolation. And I think a lot of that, you know, I think of like David when he fell, when he was on the rooftop and he saw Bathsheba. In that verse, it's like when the kings went off at war and he didn't go do the thing that he was supposed to do. Like, you know, he didn't go to war where he was supposed to be. He's like, eh, I'm good. Like, I'm just going to sit back. And I get concerned, you know, this is kind of like the mama's heart. I get concerned with young people that are just like, they're flowing and they're doing whatever they feel. And they're just like, I'm not going to commit. I'm just like, oh, if you don't live like on purpose, like if you don't live with like a focused life, like I get worried about like that place of idleness. So then it says like, you know, like then he went to the rooftop and he just kind of like idled around like at night because he was bored. And that's when he saw Bathsheba bathing. And I just think of like, oh man, like if we're just like, we're too idle, like we're just too idle with the thing that God has called us to. We're too idle with the thing that God has entrusted us with, our children, our marriages, our friendships, our relationships. If we're not like deliberate and intentional, like we can get in that place where we're just like, we just have this impact of idleness that results in drifting and damaging our potential. And I see how in COVID or in isolation, like I was like, I was idling. I was with, you know, I wasn't getting up and getting out the door, going to my workout, going to my meetings, going to work. And it was like, oh, I'm idling. And it, you know, it had potential for great destruction. But I do, you know, I do think that meaningful connection, meaningful community, investing in hard conversations is so rewarding on the other side. It is, even if you are an introvert, it is important. God created us to have meaningful relationships, to have connections with one another. And, you know, we have women in our community that are spread all over the city of Los Angeles. And I'm like, we got to fight for that. Like, you have to, like, it's hard. Like, you're grinding, I'm like, I encourage like our core leaders and our staff girls, like really make an effort, like try to stay connected, because you live so spread out in LA and traffic is greater. It's hard just to get together and get a coffee, but like fight for those connections and fight for those relationships. They're very, very important.
I see that in the really large cities, like in DC too, everything's an effort. No one lives like, you know, I can get anywhere I want to go in Albuquerque in 25 minutes, anything I want to do. And it's such a different world. And I'm assuming, boy, time goes by fast. And I want to hit a couple more things, but I'm assuming one of the reasons you started your community, it's called HER, is your, I like to say they're women's movements. You know, women's ministry sometimes feels like what I went to when I was in my 20s that I hated. So, you know, I think a movement, but you start that to help foster a place for women to connect, because it's so important. And I feel like men too, but I long for connection, especially post COVID, like you were mentioning. So I think, don't you feel like women, we have a different, well, obviously we're different.
Yeah, no, we had a HER night and I passed out these prayer, or maybe we didn't pass them out. Maybe we had them outside. Like, you know, I'm adding too many details. Chad's always like, get to the point. And I'm like, you know what? I don't talk fast. I talk in circles. So adding the detail of where the prayer cards was, no one is asking for that, but here we are. The prayer cards were outside, apparently. I don't know where they were, but I had women fill out these prayer cards and I read everyone. The next morning we have like an all church prayer meeting and I read everyone and I was shocked to find that people longed for genuine community or genuine relationships. And it was like what they were praying for. I thought it was like top request was going to be MOG, man of God, like, give me that husband. Give me that. Like, you know, I need him. But they were like, it was so many prayer requests for like, I need friendship. Like, I feel lonely. I need genuine connection. And it is a common want. It's a common need. It's a human need. Like, I am created to connect with someone. And I think that becomes challenging too in different seasons, you know, like you have to reinvent what that looks like. And it always takes work and it takes vulnerability. It takes challenging yourself to work in areas that you might be deficient in. Like, for example, like I am not a natural chatter. Like, I'm not a natural conversationist. conversationalist. Like most women, like they say they have like the tons of words a day. Like that's not me. Like I don't like to talk like in general. And I think it has a lot to do with like I have ADD. So a lot of times it was like hard for me to like concentrate to like get the words like linear or clear as a communicator. And it felt like a lot of pressure for me. So sometimes, like even as a mom, I'm like, man, I need to challenge myself to ask better questions. Like I watch some of these moms just like going there so deep with their kids and like pulling out like gold. And like, I'm like, you guys, this is so embarrassing, but like I have to Google questions sometimes, like to ask my children. You know, they just don't come naturally for me. I was like, who made you laugh today at school? You know, I'm like, it, I'm like,
That's a good
Alexa, like,
question that you Googled.
you know, I'm like, Alexa, like, help me get some good questions for the kids. Cause I'm like, they're not just coming to me. And so it's like, and also like, I am not great at confrontation. Like, I realize like it is so important to have hard conversations. It's so important as a pastor. If you see something, say something. Like, you know, we've been doing this for long enough. Like, if you have intuition or like your heart is saying like something is not okay with that sister, like say something. You know, I was not like invasive like at all. That is not like my bent. But like that was something I too like had to challenge myself and had to grow in. So I do think that there's areas where we're like, okay, God, like bring me a best friend. But I'm like, oh, like we need to also grow in our maturity, you know, like, but then on the flip side, like there's things that I'm very strong in that I recognize. Like I have a lot of discretion. Like I don't crave gossip. Like I don't need to know. Like, you know, so I do know that like there are some things like I'm like, oh, okay, like I can be proud of myself in this area and then I can grow in myself and see my flaws in this area. And I think that you know, is part of maturing as a believer and being a person that follows you know, just growth patterns is like, God, inspect me, know me, like, where can I grow? How can I be aware? And how can I be a better friend? And it's not always fun growing, you know?
Well, I mean, I've known you for over a decade now, but from the place I see you from, you're very strong and you're very wise. And that combination, and I'm such a talker that gets me in trouble. Not in trouble, but I just talk a lot. And I think, oh, I wish I could be like my husband, who really his so he doesn't talk a lot, but when words come out, you stop and listen because they're going to be gold. And I say so many words, people are like, you know, they're like, that's so many. I don't know which is gold and which is silver. And he's just, and Galen.
I'm gonna text you and I'm gonna ask you for questions to ask my kids then. See, you know, you would know.
I'm
I
such
don't
a believer in the
like
table and what, you know, you're talking. I wrote a cookbook and it's called The Table, and it's the whole
oh.
idea about that. And I wrote and stories from my kids, my grown sons and grandkids. And just today, my 16-year-old grandson Asher texts already this morning and said, KK, are we having family dinner tonight? And I said, yes. And he said, what are we having? And I listed everything. He said, oh, yum. And my teenage grandkids text to ask if we're going to be together. We've walked through so many seasons around our table, and if you'll meet there long enough, and your kids are at a crazy age, and it's going to get better and better, they're just going to start eventually talking to you. I feel like it's harder with boys than girls because boys by nature don't share feelings as much.
Don't want to sit down and listen and talk. They
No, no.
want to jump off the roof of the house. Yeah.
Yeah, I just made that, you know, the practice we have and. This Monday night thing is their whole family, but I cook everybody's favorites on purpose because I want them to come. And boy, the stories we could tell that we've walked through in our table. And one day I'll share some ideas. You know, you talk about your wonderful 40s. You know, I'm in my mid-60s now. And so life looks even more different than, you know, it did. So I'm so jealous of your decade you're in. My 40s were my favorite decade, my
Oh.
favorite. I loved everything about it. I love my 50s too, but 40s. You're still really have smooth skin and pretty in your 40s, and you're tight, your arms, you're not flabby, and you you know, you have more money than you had in your 30s. Your kids are easier to, you know, take in public.
Yeah. Well,
all that. So enjoy. Enjoy. So our time is so quickly coming to an end. I had two questions real quick, just rapid fire questions to end with the things that I want to know about you. But so I want to know quickly how you're grounded every day. Do you have a favorite scripture? Do you, like, I have comfort food. Food is not a big thing to me as much as it used to be, but what's your favorite scripture? Let's just go there. Helps keep you grounded.
My gosh, that's like asking who my favorite meal or my favorite kid. I can't do that. My favorite scripture. I feel like this like speaks to like some of the grit in me. Like I do love a lot of like Paul's writing, like I press forward, you know, forgetting what's behind me. I apply that a lot, like, you know, forgetting not only like the failures, because I tend to put a lot of pressure on myself, and I tend to be one that remembers. And so I try to forget failures, but I also try to forget successes and not live in glory days. And I like that concept of applying that, like, I press forward to the new, like, amazing things that God has for me today and this week. Grounded.
I see that in you. I see that in, I mean, that,
oh,
I see that.
You.
I totally see that in you. And I believe that that is a gift that you have.
Thank you. That's very kind of you. I have my moments. I have some emotional instabilities. I like almost panicked trying to get this ring light up, you know, like I'm a reactor. I'm not the most cool and collective mom. I had a therapy appointment one time and I asked her, I said, you know, I want to talk today about how not to be an angry mom. And she goes, well, walk me through the last time you got angry at the kids. And I walked through the scenario and she kept interrupting. And she goes, you know what? I think I would be angry too. And I was like, wait a minute, are you affirming
my anger? I want to see your therapist.
Yeah. I was like, wait a minute, we're supposed to solve this problem. No. I think the grounded thing is like, I think it's important to like, I am just so grateful that I live in a place where there's a lot of sunshine and I love being outside. Like I love getting the kids out. I love walking. I love movement. Like it is important for me to move.
I love the beach. The beach is therapeutic for me.
It is really like important for us to try to go like see the beach, see the sunset at the beach, walk along the beach. Like we're so grateful that we live pretty close to the beach.
We don't. But
yeah. I mean, it is like,
I go to Alabama a lot. So
oh, people look at us and they're like, why would you live in California? Why would you live in Los Angeles? And I am just like, it's the greatest place. I love it so much. And people think that we like, I mean, sure, there's West Hollywood here. Like, sure, there's, you know, we are close to a lot of culture, but we live like a very casual, like sweet, like suburban, like the little league, like we have the little league and like the casual weekends, and like it is really epic and special. And
I know how much you guys prioritize family, and it's,
we spend a lot of
on the right track. You're doing all the right things, and I watch that as a, you know, grandma of all ages of grandchildren, 22 to Brett and Delaney, you're expecting again, so that's my 10th grandchild. So I've kind of got a little bit of, you know, I can see it so clearly for you, and I'm just happy for you. And so give us, in closing, and I'm going to ask you to pray in just a moment, but before we do, I think this is so important. You've kind of spoken to this along the way, but if you could tell your younger self, your, you know, Julia in her 20s, if you could tell her one thing, what would you say to her?
I mean, this probably speaks more to my personality type, but I would say to be kinder to myself and to be like more gracious and kinder to myself. And I think if I really look back to my younger self, like I wish I reached out and did more growth work of like maturing, like spiritually, emotionally, relationally, because I was such an achiever and a doer. So I was like, we're just going to keep going. We're going to keep climbing. Like it was really, I wish I would have done more work, like connected with older women and heroes and being like, you know what? I'm really flawed in this area. Like, can you help walk me through this, you know? And, that would have required a lot of humility, but I was just like, nope, I'm on a path. I want to do what I want to do. And, yeah, I think those are two areas, but those speak a little bit more specifically to my story. I think if you're younger and you're listening, I have children as a mom, like I just think we need more heroes. Like we just talked about the boundaries thing, like grab a younger girl. Like if you're a mom of three, like find the mom that's just having her first. Like if you are a 21-year-old college age, find a teenage girl, like become someone's hero, like invest in the younger. Like we need more middle school girls being picked up by like high school girls or college age girls that are not above it. Like we need more people to say like, I'm not too busy and I want to believe in you and invest in you.
I love that. I have chills and you've just affirmed, you know, so many things that I've already had episodes on our podcast and things I see with my own grandchildren and people that have taken time with them. And it's just a beautiful thing. I hope that someone really picked up on what you just said. I think that's one of the best pieces of advice I've heard in a long time. Be someone's hero. Why not? Right. And we've got to get off because I could go all day, but I think about my own self. I get to a place. I think I'm too old now for that. I'm, you know, and not to feel, don't feel sorry for myself, but then I've realized my best little group of friends, they're all in their 20s and I have dinner with them once a month. There are seven of them. And they're the highlight of my month to be with these 20 somethings. And the only reason they wanted us to do this collective, this dinner, is they said, we want you to teach us. We want to talk to you. And this is the best way we could have you for 2 hours is to go to dinner with you once a month. So God just really blessed me to be able to do that and help me to see that people do want, you know, an older generation to stay connected to them. So thank you for saying that, because it affirms to me. I feel like if you could close us out in prayer, it's amazing to me. The age group that listens to this podcast or watches mostly is the bottom end of millennials and Gen Z. We're able to watch the ages. And it blows my mind that that many young people, mostly women, girls, listen to this and watch. So I feel like speaking in, I mean, I believe in speaking into life, and we become what we're told and what people say and what God says about us. So if you could close us out in a prayer that could strengthen someone, you've built muscle in seasons of your life. You have had to build muscle in seasons of your life. And so I believe in all authority, you can pray over us to help us know how to be strengthened in whatever season we're going through.
Thank you. Absolutely. I would be honored. God, we thank you for every girl, every woman, every sister, every friend, every mother, every grandma, every daughter that is listening today. God, I thank you that when it says we cast our cares on you, God, we thank you that you care for us today. God, we thank you that we cast our cares because we trust you, that we have good, gracious, loving hands of a good father that we can place and we can cast our fears, our doubts, our concerns, our worries upon. God, I thank you for every person that is listening today that might identify with being in a waiting season, that they might be in between the place of the pain and promise and feeling like they are just dependent on your timing, but feeling a little anxious or uncertain. God, that you would just come supernaturally and just give comfort and joy and security to those that might be waiting for a baby, those that might be waiting for a husband, those that might be waiting for a new friend, those that might be waiting for a miracle. God, we just thank you for every prayer request and every need. We thank you that you are our source, our provider. But even more than that, you are the one that we are first in a relationship with. God, that you would strengthen us today. In Jesus' name, amen.
So good. So good. We're going to officially close down, you know, in this episode. I knew that it would be special because, you know, I knew the words you would say. I've heard you speak and I've watched you do interviews on, even at our church. I'm so grateful that you take the time. I know that your minutes are spoken for, not just your days, but your minutes. And the fact that you gave them to us on this podcast, I'm very blessed. So thank you very, very much for saying yes. And I can't wait to get feedback from this episode. Thank you, Sheree. I love you so much.
Thank you. Love you guys too.
Thank you for joining me today on Table Talks. For more content and information about upcoming episodes, please visit my website at kwoodward.com. You can also explore other podcast links and resources there. Until next time.